To the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for April 24th, 2003. Glad to have you all here. Have any of you in the audience not heard my spiel about truthful and accurate testimony according to the law? Okay, you haven't. Well, then I get to give it.
I read the guy in the orange hat.
If you sign up on the witness registration sheet to testify today, and you are a lobbyist or a government official, you are governed under two ORSs that say your testimony before this committee today must be truthful and accurate. If you are a member of the general public, this does not apply to you. However, we still want your testimony to be truthful and accurate. So having said that, we have four bills on the agenda today, and we intend to work all four of them. And we're going to start with a work session on House Bill 3270. Members, let me tell you where we're at on this. We are substantially amending this bill to reach agreement in regards to language that has some folks nervous. So what our problem is that we're running out of time. And this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Yes. And what I would ask you to do is adopt the dash threes, and then we're going to end up taking this to Ways and Means and working it in Ways and Means. Not everyone who is generally in support of this concept is happy with the language. Both on the property tax side and in the language regarding quote-unquote priority consideration for economic development dollars. The words priority consideration will surely go away, of that I can assure you. And we're going to come up with some other language which we're sort of talking about now that reflects a concern that this industry has not had the opportunity, perhaps, in prior years to have serious consideration of their needs. Let's put it that way. Representative Smith, your thoughts.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. Where are the amendments?
Ray is doing them right now for you.
So we will have them?
The dash threes, but keep in mind that the dash threes are going to be...
We have the dash
threes. Yeah, we have dash
threes. You have dash threes?
Yeah. We've had them from before.
Dash three is the one we had last meeting.
That was the last discussion.
Did you just copy the dash threes?
Yes.
Okay, well, everybody's got them. Okay. There's a couple of technical changes need to be made. Oregon Economic Community Development Commission needs to be changed to department. We will clearly change the words priority consideration. And I think that we have some general agreement. We have a problem with the property tax provision that we negotiated not only for this but for my biofuels legislation, which unfortunately we weren't able to hear in this committee. Now, we have reached agreement with special districts, counties, and so forth, although we're still massaging some of that language. The language we had agreed on the property tax provision as a work group Tuesday night ended up finding out from legislative council we couldn't adopt that. So we're working on different language with them now and working on getting approval from all of the people there. So what I would ask you to do is to trust me to take into your account your concerns, which are expressed in the individuals that are the players in this issue, that are stakeholders, that we can adequately address them down in Ways and Means. If we can't, it's my guess this bill doesn't go anywhere. Out of Ways. Your thoughts, Representative.
In terms of the deadlines we're facing, I mean, obviously, I understood all the deadlines up through last week. What are the specific deadlines that we're up against now in terms of getting things to Ways and Means now versus next Tuesday?
We can get, I believe, the permission to carry this bill over if that's what the pleasure of the committee is. And we can continue to work the language in this committee if that's what you want to do. I have a number of other bills, Senate bills, that need to move through our committee. Obviously, those are less problematic in many ways because they've already been heard and amended on the Senate side. And so we are, in essence, concurring by having the hearings over here and moving it forth. So, you know, I'm happy to try to do whatever I can in the committees to address the committee's concerns now, clearly in the future, because I want to make this a good bill. I want to get this done, and I want us to be effective for what we're trying to achieve here, what I'm trying to achieve as my ultimate goal with this legislation. Yes,
if I can just follow.
Absolutely.
I guess my sense of the Ways and Means Committee, not that I don't trust the Ways and Means Committee, I just can't see with all the other stuff they've got. I mean, they don't have a subcommittee on agriculture. Maybe they did.
It would go to Senator Meserle's Natural Resources Committee. They get all our bills of this type.
Yeah, I mean, based on the hearings, as opposed to having to re-educate them with all the hearings.
We're going to have to anyway, because the bill, no matter what we do to it, still is assigned to Ways and Means because of what it does.
Yeah, and if we had a good final product,
you would feel better about doing
that. That's my personal bias.
Okay, Representative Beyer.
Well, I'd be perfectly happy to move this -3 amendments into the bill, but I wouldn't be comfortable giving this bill a do pass recommendation, moving it down to Ways and Means. I couldn't do that the way it is.
As it's currently written
with the amendments. I have concerns with the amendments, Stephen.
Well, again, what I'm telling you is that this is still very much a work in progress, and the -3s are only partially what it's going to end up looking like, because clearly we're going to have to modify the -3s to meet the concerns of not only committee members but stakeholders in the audience. There's no doubt about it. Yes, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a courtesy vote to do that. If I guess my concern is there's too many problems with it, and I... You know, so often we hear in this process, we'll fix it later, and we're getting late in the session. I kind of agree we need to fix it here if we're going to fix it. But I will do whatever the chair...
Well, I appreciate that, Representative. Vice Chair Gilman, what do you want to do?
I was happy to vote it down to Ways and Means as amended here, but if it sounds like most of the committee would prefer to work it here, and that's fine with me. I'd just like to get it done, though.
We all just want to get it done.
And I'd be more than happy to give a courtesy vote, and as long as the property tax exemption is taken out, I'd be on the board. I don't mind sending it with.
Okay. Representative Worthy, it is not my, I will share with you, it is not my intention to take out the property tax exemption, but rather to amend the language to make it work for. I guess complying with in accordance with the constitutional provisions of our tax policy as they exist. In other words, we got to fix the language to make it work with the law. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your thoughts there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Further question?
Yeah.
If we moved the -3 to and moved it as amended to Ways and Means, could we do it as a conceptual amendment to address the issues, or is
No, it's much too...
too many.
Yeah, it's much too much to do in the bill to do a conceptual.
Okay.
Usually a conceptual is deleting a word, something like that.
And they don't want us to.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
Representative Nelson, any thoughts you wanted to share on this?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You probably don't want to hear them.
I always want to hear your thoughts.
I guess there are several questions, and I was just wondering if it were me or this is the truth. Based on an individual, one of two in the state already in business, in the slaughterhouse business, happens to live in my district, happens to have employed hundreds of individuals over the years, done an A-plus job. Through their lawyers, they're concerned that there's an accompanying bill, a 3269, that provides prison labor four slaughterhouses, for example, inmate labor.
Representative Nelson, 3269 is as dead as Elvis.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
But we're not.
Now, I love Elvis, but 3269 actually is my other bill, representative, that was a companion bill with this. And we have decided to roll elements of it into, and that's actually what the Dash 3 does. And mostly it's the preamble. And our negotiations with OECD about how to offer opportunities for slaughterhouses in a different way to receive the help of the OECD. We took out some of the language that was in 3269, and 3269 is dead. It's not going anywhere.
Okay.
And it's in this committee, and it's going to stay dead. Okay?
Thank you very much. I'm happy about that one. Now, could I just, if you did, I'll go forward with a couple more questions.
Sure.
Regarding this. One second. There are two, this is my understanding, there are two main slaughterhouses in Oregon. And I guess we have the good cattleman back here who could tell otherwise. One is located in Carlton, Oregon, and one is located in Klamath Falls, both of which slaughter primarily swine. The one in Carlton, for example, does 80% swine and 20% beef. We used to have two more slaughterhouses in the state of Oregon, and however, there was an insufficient business for four. So the concern is, do we really have a need? Well, since this happens, you know, to be one area of market study I've never done, I'm sorry to say, nor can I afford it on my salary. But from this further study, it was the fact that 200 head of cattle each month go to Northern California and 200 head of cattle go to Western Idaho. My question is that enough, you know, for two more slaughterhouses? Somebody here maybe can answer that.
Well, Representative, certainly if someone from the cattle industry would like to come forward and answer that, we did have testimony in front of the committee, and we have written testimony in our packets. In regards to there are actually several very, very small slaughterhouses still operating in the state. And Bartels Meat, who did give us testimony that is in your packet, has talked about the number of head of cattle that they currently are processing and how that they can double their production if they have some help in getting them to that point, and that includes many things. Glenn, would you like to address Representative Nelson's concern?
Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Specifically, what we're trying to accomplish here is not letting the cattle and calves leave the state simply because we don't have the facilities. We don't have the facilities, and therefore the added value goes to other states. And take, for instance, Carlton Pack. If they slaughter cattle, you know, and we always think of the beef hanging. Well, there's a whole lot of other stuff called offal, which has value. But because they don't have rendering facilities, and this bill does address rendering facilities, because they don't have the rendering facilities, that becomes a nuisance to them. They have to pay transportation and usually a fee to someplace else that has rendering facilities, because you simply can't dump that someplace. I mean, which is right, the right thing to do. This bill would not only help those smaller ones enlarge to take care of the rendering side of that, which they could actually get some value out of. And of course, that means jobs and building and that sort of thing. Plus anyone else who was thinking about getting into the business. Now, from the cattleman, the producer who produces the cattle, what do we get from that? The fact that any time there are more people to bid on the cattle, not to take them out of state, but to keep them in the state, then we may pick up a penny or two per pound, which sometimes is the only profit left in the animal. I don't know if I totally answered your question, but I hope that gives you a concept of where we're coming from with this bill. And just to add to the chairman's statement, if I may, Mr. Chairman, we understand that the word priority, and I guess I even felt a little uncomfortable answering what that meant, but if we had something that said serious consideration, well, obviously economic development gives serious consideration to everything. What that does, in a sense, to our people who might be thinking about it, and in the past they thought, hey, nobody's really serious about trying to help us. We say, hey, right here, the state recognizes that cattle and calves and slaughtering and added value has, that they are taking serious consideration of this. Now it's up to them to go forth and plead their case like anybody else would.
Very good.
And like a poor stepchild, I guess.
In many ways, that's the case. Representative, I would, if in your packet, I don't know if you have information in your file, some of the testimony that was given in the committee. One is from the president-elect of the cattleman, Coy Cowart, that says there are 12 small stationary slaughter facilities with USDA processing licenses. Two of them are primarily pork, and I think it's the two that you referenced. And there are 16 custom-only slaughterhouses, and there are 67 mobile slaughterhouses and 95 custom processors. To address your concern about do we really need this, he also gives a statistic here, 2,500 cattle a day in Pasco, Washington, are processed in the Tyson Foods facility. And then we had testimony from Chris Bartels, Bartels Meats, in Eugene, who is slaughtering 60 head a day, has a market demand for 200 a day because they're introducing the private label beef cutting and wrapping for some of these export markets. And then we have the sheep folks who their testimony here says there's 590,000 lambs currently raised in the Northwest and only 2.2% are slaughtered and processed in the region. So what that means is they're being sent, all the lambs we grow here are being sent out. And another part of Coy Cowart's testimony says that basically 98% of our cattle grown in Oregon are sent outside of the state to be processed. So I think there probably is a substantive need for additional slaughterhouses. The key is, what type will they be? Will they be value-added slaughterhouses that are much more advantageous to local communities? And will they be USDA processing facilities, those types of things? Those are part of the questions that we discussed in that first. And it's unfortunate. I think that's the day that you were sick, actually.
No, I was here.
No, you're listed as excused, actually.
And Mr. Bartels and...
On the 22nd, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson was not here.
On the 22nd,
last,
yeah. But you were here for the original.
Yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday I was at the senior transportation negotiating. But other than that, I have been here. But I guess, you know, what we don't have from a person who lived in the world of market development, market research, and had to substantiate market before we were able to build additional satellite bases, I think that's probably what we don't know, one. And secondly, I'm not real fond of the performance of OECDC. That is no surprise to anybody. And thirdly, I've been very disappointed to find that when we're utilizing these funds, what happens is we become a semi-independent state agency. You know, we're partners with business rather than private enterprise. And I think the bill is that intimates right now that it does intimate that we're not a private business. We are, because of the way in which we're receiving funds, we become, you know, a state-owned entity. And I know we just got another bill for another one this week, and I was in shock trauma to find out we keep doing that.
So my suggestion is, in light of this and in light of also further explaining the tax savings concept, you know, for new and improved, new construction, improved, and also facilities, and also the, where they should be located. And if we do have, you know, 400 head of cattle a month is enough for one, two, or three new slaughterhouses, I think we have to justify the use of the money and the however many lamb there are and whatever else we want to cut up, which makes me sick. But just the thought of it.
Okay, Representative, thank you. And
so therefore, Mr. Chair, I would postpone this bill to a week from today.
Actually, we're going to postpone it till Tuesday and have an opportunity to continue to work. But we're not in tomorrow. And are you going to be here Tuesday?
Yes, but I move that we wait to a week from today. So I cannot move to do that.
No.
I move to postpone this bill to time definite, which would be a week
from
today.
Oh, no.
Aren't I smart? Give us time to answer those questions, because having only 2 days between now and then, we won't have them.
It's dangerous now.
I know.
Okay. Representative, I would ask you to, if you could, amend your motion till Tuesday, as I was just informed that we have authorization from the Speaker's office to hear this bill on Tuesday. Could you do that? They've already authorized. Otherwise, we'll have to go back to them and ask them to authorize it for Thursday. That be all right? Could you do that for me?
I guess I need to ask, Mr. Chair, how do we have time to do that research, you know, with a weekend upon us to find out that information in one day on Monday?
Representative, I'm looking at my notes from Dalton Hobbs from Oregon Department of Agriculture. And he says here there's 1.5 million cattle in Oregon, 70,000 head are slaughtered here. That would tell me that there's a fairly substantial need for additional slaughterhouses here in this state, I guess, based on that. And in terms of the language on, there's no research that needs to be conducted in terms of the property tax issue. That's simply a matter of us
saving. Use the lottery
saving.
Funds. Uh-huh, and use the lottery funds, uh-huh.
The use of lottery funds would be potentially either grants or revolving low-interest loans.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think, you know, I'm a builder of businesses, so I'm not trying to kill business opportunity, but I just, when we come to inadequate information that is so conflicting, I'm in shock. It's not that, and I know Glenn knows John Dine of Carlton Packing Company. It's not like they've been there 2 days. I mean, when they've been there, you know, 100 years. Something is wrong with our information.
I call for questions.
Okay. Can you find Representative Gilman, if you would, please?
Yes. Sure.
If he's close by.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
just for a point of clarification, if I can be helpful or our industry can be helpful to answer your question, I'd be glad to work with you, because I'm a little confused as to when you say conflicting information. If you have information that, see, I'd be happy to work with you on it and to try to find this.
I'd be happy to hand it to you, and you... I'd be happy to. And you call this law firm and answer these questions, because none of us can.
Yeah.
If you'd like me to do that, I'd
love
work
it.
Over the weekend to do that.
I'd love it.
That'd be great. Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate that. And thanks, Representative, for being
Somebody's way off target. You know, and I hope it's not new business. I mean, I hope new business doesn't suffer because we don't have our data. I am for new business.
Okay. No. Members, a motion is on the table to table this bill until a time certain, I believe, of next Thursday. The clerk would call the roll, please.
Representative Punch?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Worth?
Yes.
Representative Gilman?
Excused.
Chair Crow?
No. Motion fails. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3270, and we will continue to discuss this. Members, thanks for all of your thoughtful comments today, and we'll work this out. It'll be just fine. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill, Senate Bill 241A. Ray, you want to tell us what this bill does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 241A, which was heard on March 6th originally, extends the sunset by 2 years for the Department of Agriculture civil penalties imposed for quarantine order violations, control area violations, failure to timely pay timber product health program fees, acting as an unlicensed nursery stock grower, dealer, or agent, and acting as an unlicensed Christmas tree grower. Those issues, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that were discussed include agency exemptions, sudden oak death disease, quarantine and area control authority, and general health and safety program. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. Chuck, you want to come visit with us about this?
He opened a work session. The chair does have the authority to call a witness under a work session.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Chuck Craig, Deputy Director, Department of Agriculture. We testified on this bill on March 6th, and we're fine with the bill as it is. I guess what I would offer to do is try to answer any questions or offer any clarifications that you might have of us.
Any questions?
Just make a motion to move it. Or two.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, here's some.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Oh, Representative Nelson.
Okay. I just wondered, how do we get, thank you, Mr. Chair, how do we get how new diseases identified that should be quarantined, where areas should be quarantined?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, a variety of ways, but we have scientists on our staff, and we also have a nursery inspection program in which we have inspectors inspecting nursery stock that is in commerce continuously in the state, and they are trained to recognize things that are detrimental new pests or diseases. And so one way is just the fact that we're out there inspecting the stock that's moving through the state. The other is that we have folks that keep abreast of observations of new diseases that might not be in commercial channels but might be occurring naturally in the environment, spreading into Oregon. We collaborate with a variety of other organizations with similar interests, like the U.S. Forest Service and BLM and other organizations that have similar interests in precluding detrimental new pests and diseases from entering Oregon. And we have fairly formal sampling programs. For example, for the gypsy moth, which occurs sporadically in Oregon, we put out about 16,000 traps every year. We collect those traps, we analyze the distribution of them, and we track the changes in time, and we determine from that when it's appropriate to conduct an eradication operation somewhere so that it cannot get a foothold in Oregon.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yes.
Chair, having sprayed those gypsy moths and spruce budworms and everything else that we have, my concern is, does the directive come from you to the grower?
that my stand needs to be quarantined, and or do I have an appeal to arbitration, or do I have a certain period of time before these penalties are imposed upon me?
Yes,
other professionals.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, you have to get a notice first, a notice of violation, and an opportunity to correct the situation.
And does that come via mail?
Yes.
Certified?
Or we could personally serve it, but if that part of the process doesn't result in it being resolved. And I mean, there may certainly are cases from time to time where we're mistaken or there are extenuating circumstances. But if it's not resolved that way, then the person that receives this notice from us has the right to a contested case hearing under an independent hearings officer. And that is what determines the outcome of the case. And the example that I related to committee on March 6th was one where a person had abandoned his orchard in an orchard-growing part of the state and was failing to control the coddling moths in that orchard, and it represented a serious problem for the neighboring orchards. That person had his hearing. And so there's very good process here, I think, to prevent people from arbitrary action.
And finally, Mr. Chair, my concern is that these penalties, if they are financially are unable to pay these penalties, what do you do? Are there OECDC monies available which they can borrow to pay their penalty so they keep their timber or whatever it is? Stock.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, first of all, there never have been any penalties levied because our philosophy in the department is to work with people and educate them as much as possible before we use punitive means to gain cooperation. So the primary value of this authority has been as a deterrent, so that, you know, when someone thumbs our nose at us and says, you know, I'm not going to buy a nursery license, that the penalty for not doing that costs more than it costs to get the nursery license. And we can say, look, you know, we can understand all that, but here's what can happen if you don't get your license, and here are the reasons why we license nurseries and for the benefit of the industry. And almost always our ability to do that is successful. But if it's not, and something continues that represents a threat to Oregon agriculture, we have to take action. But there's an ample opportunity for us to arrive at a solution that's not punitive, and we take that very seriously.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you. Any additional? Representative Huff.
I just want the department of the industry. This is a great solution. Huge industry in my county and in our state. And I would be happy to move Senate Bill 241A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Members, Representative Hunt has moved Senate Bill 241 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, 241A. Further discussion? Is there further objection? Hearing none. So ordered. And Representative Hunt, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd be delighted to.
Very good. And the chair would like to thank the Oregon Department of Agriculture for working with these individuals in these circumstances to help them recognize their opportunities. Thank you. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 241. We're going to open a work session, public hearing and work session, rather, on Senate Bill 204. Ray, tell us what this bill is about.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 204, which originally came to this committee on March 6, authorized the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board to take evidence, take depositions of witness, compel appearances of witnesses, require answers to interrogatories, compel production of documents and files, and issue subpoenas during the course of investigation. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those issues that the committee discussed last time this bill was heard was the legal difference between the words compel and require, naturopathic veterinary medicine, and current legal authority. Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Ray. And
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'll move Senate Bill 204 to the floor with a defense.
We have two people who would like to testify first. Can we do that?
We can.
Thank you very much. Could you rescind your motion?
If you need me to, I will withdraw.
We're in
they don't care.
Public hearing. Did I open a public hearing and work session?
Yes, yes. Mr. Chair.
I did. Well, then we can leave the motion on the table.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Chair would like to welcome and call forward Lori and Marcia. And this does not have a subsequent referral anywhere.
No, Mr. Chair, it does not.
It does not. Very good. Welcome, for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, for the record, I'm Lori Mockinen, Director of the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. And I have nothing to add to this. But if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Marcia?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marcia Keith, here today representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. And we are here to support the passage of Senate Bill 204. We believe it gives the Veterinary Medical Examining Board an appropriate level of authority to regulate the profession that we are proud to be a part of, and we'd like to see Senate Bill 204 pass.
Questions? Thank you both very much. Members, we have a motion on the table to move Senate Bill 204 to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Yes, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. Maybe the problem with the bill previously was compel versus require.
Uh-huh.
If I understand it, did that get corrected? I don't see that anywhere.
Well, we're talking about Senate Bill 204.
Yes, sir. That was the notes that was the requirement. I mean, that was the problem of compel versus require, and now we're...
Yeah.
By law,
yeah.
I mean, that was the issue.
Okay.
I don't know what to do, so forget it.
Okay. Further discussion.
Could you come back? Could whatever name this come back?
Marcia Keith is
one. Not Marcia. I'm sorry. Gloria.
Gloria, come forward.
Lori. Mr. Chair, Lori, last time you were here, that was the issue we were going to correct or needed to be corrected. And I just don't, unless there's an amendment somewhere, I don't see we didn't change it.
Mr. Chair, there's no amendment.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe last time Legislative Council came over and defined the differences, and I don't recall that there was any direction to further define the language.
The problem with it was, if I could, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Lori, was that the compel means urge forcibly, and we don't coerce. And it was my understanding those were going to be changed. I just
Mr. Chair,
happened to have the notes here. So I just wonder why we didn't. I think the vets, you know, I know Dr. Schrader's on here, but I just wondered if we wanted to just make a note of that and maybe amend it on the Senate side, because I think that that is an issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think that this language was pretty much lifted verbatim from some other boards' statutes. So I think the language is pretty much standard across the board. I don't think that I'm not sure what other word than compel we would want to use if the other boards are using that language.
Well,
it doesn't mean that we're
going out. I might just add is in one case you use require or request. In this case, the compel, according to the attorneys, is a forcible action. I mean,
it might
physical,
be noted.
Physical forcible action.
Representative, that. I, as the chairman of this committee, have the ability under the force of law to compel witnesses to come before us under powers of subpoena granted us by the statute and the Constitution. So we have, it's certainly not unprecedented in any way, shape, or form.
Well, in that case, then we should compel the answers to the interrogatories, too, which would be just the opposite, which we only require. So, anyway.
So noted. Thank you very much. Further discussion? Hearing none, is there objection?
Stay home today.
Since hearing no objection, Senate Bill 204 is hereby passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation. And who would like to carry Senate Bill 204?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we place this on the consent calendar.
Yep.
Why don't we do that? Senate Bill 204, it has been moved, members, that Senate Bill 204 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. All right, we're going to open up and close the work session on Senate Bill 204 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 203A. Ray, here's another bill having to do with the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. What are we doing with this one?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this also was heard on the 6th of March. It increases the membership of the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board from 7 to 8 members by adding a certified veterinary technician. It changes the title of the executive secretary to the executive director and deletes grandfather clause for those veterinarian licensed under prior laws of the state. It also deletes reference to the Department of Human Services. The issues discussed last time were current board composition, the purpose of adding a new member to the board, and the purpose of changing the title of executive secretary. Also, the reason why the reference to Department of Human Services would be deleted, and as this administrator recalls, it was actually to have statute come in line with current practice, and that was supported by both the Department of Human Resources and the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 203A to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Okay, members, it's been moved Senate Bill 203A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to be sure that there was no additional cost burden to increasing this board.
Ray? There's no fiscal attached, is
that correct? No, Mr. Chair. There is no additional cost by adding the member to the board. No additional cost to government.
Lori, any comments? Okay. Representative Nelson, does that work for you?
It works.
Wonderful.
Hallelujah, ham and bacon.
Pass the ammunition. All right. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 203A, the chair would entertain a motion to put this on the consent calendar. Representative Smith makes that motion. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We close the work session on Senate Bill 203A. We're adjourned for the day. Thank you very much.